This hour of Overdrive is delivered by Skip the Dishes. Skip the Dishes delivers the food you want from the restaurants you love. Place your order using the Skip the Dishes app or online at skipthedishes.com. It's time to get brutally honest.
An expansion team is in the cup final.
You're right, but let's...
But they're just really good.
I know that. I understand
I'm
going
to chime in here.
Just 10 minutes and this guy's pissing me off.
Hold on a second.
Get your facts straight.
It's 6 minutes into the show.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Had a weird convo at lunch today, gentlemen. Made me feel a little bit old. This dude comes up to me. This guy's a grown-ass man with a beard.
Yeah, but millennials, they're like 22-year-olds.
I don't know, but this guy, I thought that this guy might not have been that much younger than me. Shakes my hand, goes, love the Leafs. You dated my mom. I go, what? He goes, yeah, my mom told me. She saw you on TV that you guys dated. And he went and sat back down and left me just stewing.
You dated that guy's mom?
Yeah, apparently. And finally, I was thinking, is it rude if I say, can I see a pic of your mom?
No, because you'd be like, who's your mom?
Yeah, I think you could have followed through. And
that's a legitimate, okay, well, tell me who your mom is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he said her name, but I'm like... When I was 22 years old or whatever.
Was she a cougar back then?
I was going to say, was she a 35-year-old woman?
Did she have a son?
What do you think, this guy?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, imagine you're like, hey, Billy, I remember you.
Yeah.
Took you out for lunch that one time in Carolina.
You changed your crappy diaper one time.
Right. How could I forget?
You guys think the guy with the beard could be my kid?
Well, no, I'm not saying it's your kid.
You dated somebody who had a son.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Maybe he was eight
at the time or something. You don't know.
A single mom at the time.
Right.
You were 22. She was 30 or something like that.
Yeah.
That's a possibility.
I want to say to the guy, can I see a pic of your mom? Because I want to know what the hell went on here.
What about an ID? How old do you think the guy was?
I don't know. He had a beard. A beard scares me. I think a beard means you're 30.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't know about that, man.
There are people that are 22 that have beards.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're called.
It was just a weird combo because I consider myself kind of a young 42.
Yeah, but you're 42.
I know, but I don't expect a guy with a beard to say you dated my mom.
But that was 20 years ago.
If it was a gray beard, what if if he came up with gray hair or was bald or something?
What if it was your kid? That's the crazy thing, dude.
Yeah, we're old enough. I mean, we have.
Can you imagine if he turned around, he had a big fat ass on him, went out for a dart, had a beer at lunch? I would have been just horse-eyeing that guy. just started dunking pasta, blowing darts in between meals. I would have been
way too familiar. That looks like the kind of thing I would be up to.
We all have
That would be terrifying.
Think about it, though. I mean, we have children. I was an older father. I mean, Brian, you're kind of the mid-level. How old were you? How old's your oldest daughter?
Nine.
Okay, so you were 30, whatever. You were like Brian's age.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
See, I was the old man. I'm glad I'm done, but I'm worried that I'm at my kid's graduation.
Yeah,
I'm
going to be 75.
I'm going to be the old man. They're going to be oh, your grandfather came. No, that's my dad.
Well, there's nothing you can do about that now.
No, there's nothing other than, at some point, I'm going to have to dye my hair, jet black.
I don't know, man. You're the youngest 46-year-old on Earth. No. You do not look...
Benjamin Button.
Yeah, you really are Benjamin Button.
No, because you know what's going to happen is overnight, I'm just going to be Frank Saravelli's hair.
Have you seen these pictures of Jet Li?
Yes,
online?
I'll be Jet Li.
This is really a weird story.
But his agent came out and said that was a bad picture, bad lighting.
I don't know, man. Jet Li, I guess he has some disease or something's going on with him.
Right.
He's ill, but he honestly looks like he's 75 years old. In that picture, he looks like he's 75. And Jet Li was in, we just talked about Lethal Weapon. I believe he was in Lethal Weapon 4.
Right.
And he was sick in a lot of those movies.
Yeah.
But he always played the young guy.
Yeah, he had the jet black hair.
Right. I'm assuming he was in his 20s at that point. Now that's going back 15, 20 years. I'm not saying that I expected him to look like he did 1998. But the new pictures of Jet Li, like, wow, what is up with this guy?
Yeah, but I mean, when you haven't seen somebody in the public eye for a while and then they show up, like I saw Mike Myers the other day. Mike Myers, the same situation.
He's making a big comeback now.
He is, but he had the white hair.
Well, I guess he's getting back into the movies, and they're talking about doing like a Dr. Evil spinoff movie.
Yeah, it'd be great.
That's what it sounds like.
He cannot recover from the Love Guru. I will tell you that right now.
He's going to have to.
Go ahead. If you haven't seen it, check it out. And you'll never watch him again.
It died down enough, though. That was like over a decade ago that came out.
I think that was his great white
Shart. He's built up enough cachet with me. I'll watch Mike Myers movies. I love the guy.
We got some news here for the Maple Leafs. So they have promoted Brandon Pridham to assistant general manager. Now, Pridham's been with the organization for a number of years. Like, he was one of the first guys Shanahan brought in. And he used to work for the NHL, and he was involved in the CBA, and he's considered a capologist, and he knows about all the numbers and all that kind of stuff. But I guess he's taking over the former role of Kyle Dubas.
You're a sharp guy. I didn't...
But I've never spoken with him. Like, this is another thing that's happening here where nobody knows who he is, what he's been doing, what his resume is. Like, I'm not saying he's not capable of doing the job, but it's even...
You've just never spoken to the guy. You don't know what his philosophy is.
I have no... I don't know what he looks like. Like, I'm dead... I'm not joking.
No, I
could... If he walked in this room, I would say, I have no idea who you are.
I know what he looks like, but...
And not that that's a prerequisite that I need to know what you look like. But the point I'm making is this guy, he's been so obscure, they have not paraded him out to do anything. You haven't heard from him, you haven't seen him, and now all of a sudden he's a major piece of the puzzle here.
Yeah.
He's the assistant GM. He's the number two guy.
Yeah, you're right, he doesn't have to be that visible. Mark Hunter was barely visible.
But everyone knew who Mark Hunter was. They knew his background. He used to play in the league.
What about after that? You say everybody knew who Mark Hunter was.
Good-looking guy.
You heard from him zero times during the season.
But I'm not even talking about hearing from him. I'm saying Mark Hunter had a reputation when he got the job.
Correct.
This is a guy who ran an operation in London. This is a guy who played in the league, great scout, rink rat, etc. Yeah. Even when Dubas showed up, it was Kyle Dubas has been the GM in Sault Ste. Marie.
Yeah, very visible.
Visible guy. We know. Yeah. Brandon Pridham, I have no idea who he is or what he's been doing. I know he's been working with the team.
Right.
And we got to get the man on the show.
I'm not trying to be disrespectful. What I'm saying is, like, if they hired Ron Francis, we'd be like, wow, Ronnie Francis is in here. Okay. Or right. Chuck Fletcher used to. This is another guy that a lot of Leaf fans are going to be like, okay, what does this mean?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not saying it's not going to be the right move, but what it's going to do is add to the obscurity of a lot of these decisions.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if Kyle Dubas is going to be able to get the job done. I'm not saying one way or the other.
Right.
But he's never been an NHL GM. Brandon Pridham has never been an assistant GM anywhere, as far as I know.
But it sounds like, I mean, and we all know this from talking to people behind in back channels, like Brandon Pridham is a bright guy who did all the numbers. I mean, this is a guy who had his fingers all over, you know, the Clarkson contract going away. You know, Phaneuf's like, you know, deal and trades that have Nathan Horton arriving here. The way that they've been able to, it's the wrong word, circumvent some of the money things, that's that gentleman right there.
Right.
His role, I imagine, would probably be a little bit more expanded, but I think he's got his fingers over everything that has gone on.
Well, maybe this is more about the title changing.
I think it is.
But because that is fine. Continue to be the cap guy, continue to break down the numbers.
Right.
But when I think of assistant GM, I think of a guy in the rink saying, I really like this player, I'm going to go pitch it to the GM.
Yeah.
I have no idea if he can do that. Does anybody?
No.
Well, I'm pretty sure he can be able to do that if they got him the job. Or
but well, I think
what assistant GM couldn't look at a player and say, hey, maybe we should look at this guy?
I'm just saying there's a big difference between saying, you know what, Nathan Horton doesn't have insurance on his contract. Let's work that out.
Correct.
And, hey, this is the guy we want on the Marlies. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, it's a big difference.
Yeah, no, you're right. This is the traditional hockey person, like you say, the Mark Hunter that comes from an upbringing, played, did all this, as opposed to somebody who came up a different way.
This is Paul Fenton for years in Nashville.
All right.
if you're an assistant GM in the league, it usually presumes you're going to be a GM in waiting.
Right.
I just never thought of Brandon Pridham, the cap guy, as a guy who was, quote-unquote, a hockey guy, so to speak,
right,
and would be involved in talent evaluation. Now, maybe he has been the whole time.
Yeah.
What I'm pointing to is my ignorance on who he is and what he's been all about, because they haven't told us anything.
Right.
All we hear is cap guy knows the CBA inside out. Okay, yeah. Great. But
sharp guy.
Can you sit there and watch world championships and exactly. Be like, you know what, this guy in Finland who's unsigned, we should really look into him. I don't know.
Right.
But well, that's
you
ultimately
would kind of
what
think
they
for
need.
For that position, Brian, for the Toronto Maple Leafs, you would understand that you better be able to do that. Or
But let's not forget, maybe he gets an expanded role, but this could be the first of four moves for Kyle. He may be bringing in, like you mentioned, I'm not throwing names up, maybe Ron Francis is on deck. Or a guy like Sean Burke, who you know is a general manager and in waiting as well, from what you hear. So it wouldn't surprise me if some of these names floated out there as well to add to the team. But you know, Kyle Dubas, I'm sure, works with Prinham, and Lou has worked with him. So you're right. He may not be the traditional eye test guy, but obviously, and Brendan Shanahan sat there yesterday and said, And he said this, and because he knows, we weren't privy to how Lou or Kyle or Mark or that dynamic worked behind the scenes, and Babcock and Kyle. He was, and he was very comfortable with that. Obviously, Kyle is very comfortable with Brandon Pridham as his right-hand guy, and he's made that move. So, you know, good on him.
Well, and the Leafs PR tweets out, Brandon Pridham, who first joined the Maple Leafs as assistant to the GM in August of 2014, will continue to assist with salary cap analysis, contract negotiations, and collective bargaining agreement interpretation for the team.
Yeah.
So at no point in that tweet does it say talent evaluation or the draft or free agency. So right. It sounds like they're just going to effectively amplify his earlier position, and maybe they felt like they had to pay him some more money or something like that to keep him around.
Right. I think there could be multiple AGMs here.
Yeah, there could scenario. Be. And maybe that's just we're getting too caught up in the conventional wisdom of the title.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, at some point you got to bring in, like ultimately you need people that are going to come in and be talent evaluators. That's the sport in a nutshell.
No, you're right.
You don't find the players. It doesn't matter how smart you think you are or how you've got everything figured out in terms of the cap and all that kind of stuff.
Right. No, you
got to pick the players.
Exactly. And that's the scouting staff where now you've got to face the face of the scouting staff. I mean, that job's open. Mark Hunter has departed.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure they're pounding the pavement. I mean, did this surprise you at all? Like, I knew that Brandon Pridham was going to be a big part of it. I just didn't know. I mean, I think a title is a title, but it doesn't sound like his role changes that much.
Based on that
tweet.
It's like
the same role. It's
right. And I'm sure that all you hear is that he's a really bright guy.
Oh, absolutely.
And
that's what I've always heard. Uh-huh. But this is what I keep saying. When I see assistant GM, I think Dubas. That's right. What Dubas used to do.
Mm-hmm.
Dubas is a guy who's evaluating talent, who's making player personnel decisions. I have not heard over the past 4 years that Brandon Pridham was a part of that.
Right.
Now, maybe he has been, and they just never promoted that.
Right.
I've always been told that he's a guy who knows the CBA inside out. He basically co-wrote the CBA. He's a capologist. He's got all the numbers figured out. That's a very important role.
It is.
Very important role.
He's
obviously very good at it because they've done a magnificent job of working their way around the cap.
Magical job.
Yeah. But
there's no Lou anymore, buddy. We're going to get him on the show for you.
Brandon Pridham?
Yeah.
We're going to find. I mean, he may not do media. Never know.
He never has before, as far as I know.
When you Google his face, like, I know what he looks like, and I've seen him around, but he's just not front and center. And there's people that like that. That's the one thing. I mean, Mark Hunter wanted to be a general manager. He seemed to me to be a guy that didn't really like to be front and center.
He wasn't the most comfortable interview.
No.
Like, we had interviewed him a couple of times. And
yeah, very good guy and stuff, but he just, I don't think he's a guy who, I mean, you know, Kyle Dubas is very well-spoken, well-presented. I think Mark Hunter just would be happy just driving to the rink and being at the rink and evaluating talent. And now, wouldn't surprise me if he lands on his feet here somewhere in July.
He'll have options at some point.
For sure.
Again, this Leafs PR tweet, as Hunt points out, no mention of the Marlies in the statement. So, because that's what Dubas effectively has been doing the past few years, is kind of running and operating the Marlies, and he's been involved in the Leafs' personnel decisions and stuff. He's always at the draft and free agency, but Brandon Pridham promoted to assistant GM. But the hierarchy of sports is changing, too, because Shanahan's the president,
right?
And he's got his hands involved in all this kind of stuff. And then you got the GM and everyone below him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure if you asked Brendan yesterday how active he would be with Kyle.
Yeah, well, I asked him if his role is changing at all.
Right.
And
want to replay that?
No.
No, okay.
Well, we posted that answer, actually, on our Instagram account, so you can find it there.
I did, yeah. I actually saw that last night. I just can't remember, buddy.
Yeah, and he just said, I'm going to continue to support him. And
I think Brendan is when you look at a management team, you got different voices in there. He's a guy, I'm sure, that is quite active. And why wouldn't you be?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd want that voice in the room, weighing in on things.
And well, he has the right to do whatever he wants. No, I mean, he's at the top of the pyramid.
And what's the sense of having, if you're a younger GM like Kyle Dubas, I mean, if I just got a job, I would want really confident, capable people to work alongside me, but like, you know this market, if it hits the fan, this guy's going to be the next guy to take over. You bring in these high-profile people as assistant GMs, it'll just be chaos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so-and-so's thinking about this or that, or this is the next guy in line. You just, I don't know.
Yeah, you bring in the heir apparent, technically. Like, sometimes you see a general manager almost as a lame duck because you know that the other guy, an assistant general manager, has been brought in kind of with a succession plan if it doesn't go well.
Well, that effectively happened here.
Yeah.
Like, even though Lou's the guy
first comments were, if Kyle Dubas doesn't take over here, there's something wrong with him.
Yeah, and he did.
Yeah.
So.
Right. I mean, I was involved. I think it was in Calgary. Jay Feaster was there. I mean, Daryl Sutter was kicking around. Like, I think Feaster was brought in. And there was all different scenarios. I think when Craig Button was around, Daryl Sutter was brought in as a coach. And, like, it happens. So,
well, guys are fighting for positions. I mean, it's absolutely a dog-eat-dog world.
Yeah.
And egos get in the way, and people fight for position.
Oh, backdoor jobs. I mean, you think, well, who works in the island that Lou knows?
Well, his kid.
His son.
Don't you think his kid probably backdoored him or backdoored Gar Snow and went to the owner and said, hey, my dad's kind of free in Toronto. What do you think about that? Do you not think that that's probably what happened?
Well,
or help facilitate that?
But yeah. In hindsight, you're looking at it, Lou may have had an idea that this day was coming and may have put that in place because I think his son was put in place about a year ago. So
He may have read the tea leaves.
He may have said, again, he works with Kyle Dubas a lot. So he's like, this guy's a sharp guy. The success in plan is in place, like he's going to take the job,
and he's talking to Shanahan all the time. Exactly. He probably could get a bit of a read on how he felt he was leaning, but I think it probably happens more with coaching staffs.
Oh yeah,
especially if a coach is in a position where they go through the we're going to get rid of all your assistants and bring in new assistants,
right?
That whole routine, that's got to be very uncomfortable for a head coach, because the GM is hiring his new staff. And that new staff is connected to the GM, is not connected to the head coach.
And you're a dead man walking if
more than likely
don't go well.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, we've all heard stories. You guys have probably been involved in it where you're like, this assistant, we know exactly what he's up to.
Well,
he's barking up the chain with the GM and the owner. He's going to sewer this head coach.
But I mean, last
time
I've heard horror
soon.
Stories. People floating around the rinks, just sniffing around, talking to people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And coaches will try and weed out the rat on their staff. And vice versa. Stan Bowman did it to Quinville last summer. Mike Kitchen is like longtime assistant. You're out. Moved him out. Like that happened. Instead of firing the whole staff.
I don't think Mike Kitchen was the rat on the
staff. No. What I'm saying is sometimes what you do is the general manager circumvents the coach and says, I want that guy out. Instead of firing the coach, I'm going to put in place the assistants. What Brian was just saying. So no, not at all. Kitchen's not the rat. What is it kind of pissed Q off.
Right, because now he's got guys he doesn't even know.
Right, you're bringing in other guys.
That's not true. They hired Ulf Samuelsson, for crying out loud. Ulf Samuelsson and Kevin Dineen, the assistant coaches.
Yeah, they were the
best. All right, well, okay, that's one example.
Okay.
But there are other examples in the history of the sports world where, like, it happened to Carlisle, it happened to Wilson, it happened to Dwayne Casey.
It's happening to Todd McClellan.
Right.
Edmonton.
Exactly. These guys are out. We're bringing in new people.
Exactly.
And, you know.
I'd be like, if they said Brian Hayes is out and Mark Mullen is the host of Overdrive, I walk too.
Oh, really?
Really?
Thanks, man.
Weren't like that 6 minutes into the show yesterday.
Well, Mullen, I love Mullen, but.
Well,
he was an idiot yesterday. But I don't want to work with Mullen on the radio every day. He's not a host.
I like Mullen, but I mean,
you imagine me, Mullen, and Tyler Hunt. Overdrive?
Did I say Rafalski?
Oh, okay,
he's gonna sue you now, man. Yeah. Don't mess with the guy on the controls.
Exactly, the guy who's got the sound bites.
Yeah,
don't mess with him. You're right. I know what you're saying. If the coach and we're the assistant coaches, if they mess with him, then they mess with all of us. Correct.
I like it. I'm rattled by that guy in the restaurant. What if he's my son?
I'm rattled.
I feel like
too.
Darth Vader right now.
Is it your? Was it your face with a beard on it? Is that what you're concerned about?
A little bit. Little stocky guy.
We need to track this guy down.
Grit grinder. Yeah.
We need to track
Hungry
him down.
Hungry as hell too.
Just a little stocky guy. Put him on skates.
Yeah.
Right-handed shot.
Just
top shelf.
Exactly. I go watch him in the wintertime in men's league. He starts ripping one-timers.
Loves it.
Loves it.
Loves it.
Awesome.
I am not your father.
We need to find him.
No,
we need a DNA test.
We need that guy to go
away. Overdrive is delivered by Skip the Dishes. Skip the Dishes delivers the food you want from the restaurants you love. Place your order using the Skip the Dishes app or online at skipthedishes.com. Steve Phillips will join us. The Jays with a rare win last night at home. They got off to a hot start and they held on for dear life. They're back in action tonight. Jose Bautista is a New York Met. He had a double his first at bat, and then it got ugly for him the rest of the game.
Then he started fanning on some baseballs.
That drop-off curveball, man, he almost broke his hip.
He was Serrano'd.
Yeah, it was not a good hack.
Yeah.
So we'll catch up with Steve and get his take on that, and Trout and Ohtani in town, and Ray's coming up. Jerry's percentages at 5:30. All right, race coming up just after 5. Jerry's percentages in an hour. And we got Steve Phillips coming up in a moment. We haven't caught up with Steve
in a while.
Jays were the win last night. And I always think of Major League references. I was just reading the note. Scott Mitchell sent one in because I guess Gibbons was speaking with the media. And he said that Teoscar Hernandez is starting to get a heavy dosage of breaking balls because pitchers around baseball are starting to figure him out. You know, young guys come up, you try to challenge them with fastballs, and he was turning on everything. So now they're like, okay, well, let's see if you can hit a breaking pitch. And he's having troubles with that.
Serrano again.
You just think of Serrano. You think of Pedro Serrano. Like, we were just joking about Bautista and how bad he looked on a couple of those hacks last night. Hernandez, it's the same thing. Like, if they figure out you can't hit a slider or a curveball or whatever, that's all you're going to see.
Well, there was a time last year where Judge, who was just on fire, that's all he started getting.
Yeah.
The changeup, curve, whatever the hell it was nothing.
Yeah, he was
striking out like a madman.
Yeah, he struck out in like 37 straight games. It was a Major League Baseball record. How about the record that was broken last night? Houston with a very impressive win over Golden State. The Warriors had won 16 home playoff games in a row. 16, and by an average margin of like 17 points.
I said this to you off air. I'll say it on air.
It was a ballsy win.
I want great Houston win. To win. I didn't like this Steph Curry, and I know he's a great player and a great ambassador. He drains a three, and he's doing the shoulder shimmy dance and stuff like...
The game before, he was like, this is my bleeping house.
Yeah. But he's been invisible like half the games. Like in the first half, Steph didn't do much at all.
I just wanted the beard to ram it down his throat.
He did. The beard showed up, and Chris Paul had a great fourth. Like, they defended really well. They held Golden State to 12 points in the fourth quarter.
But Golden State, I mean, they were throwing bricks up.
Yeah.
Golden State had that run in the third quarter, and it was like, okay, you're not...
I thought it was over.
Yeah,
I'm like, this is done in five. Golden State's going to win this game by 25 and then spank them back in Houston. And now, I still, my instincts would tell me to lean towards Golden State because of how good they are.
Anyway.
Has to, right?
Two home games, it's like you got to be thinking, this is our time.
Right. Best two out of three with two of them in Houston. That's all you can ask for against this team. Golden State's been so good. Yeah. They knew they had to win one in a building where nobody's been able to win for years, and they found a way to do that.
Yeah, I'd like to see Houston get through.
Well, it feels like they're almost like the basketball saviors right now.
Yeah, because you were talking about it yesterday, how it's so predictable. It's Cleveland, potentially, although Cleveland's got their work cut out for them.
Yeah.
Cleveland, Golden State, 4 years in a row.
That's what it would be. That's what we're trending towards. I mean, both series are tied at two, but...
Right.
You know, that would shock the world. If it was Houston-Boston in the final, shocked the world. No one would have seen that coming. No. The idea of, you know, anyone but Golden State or Cleveland would be shocking, let alone one of them at least not being in it.
Would that piss Raptors fans off even more?
Probably.
At Boston, if Boston beats Cleveland?
Yeah, because, I mean, Kyrie Irving's out. And did you see Jalen Rose's comments that he believes Kyrie Irving doesn't want Boston to win? Because he's not playing.
So he thinks he's a selfish player, doesn't want them to win?
Well, he said, based
on... a tough comment. Like a tough comment.
Jalen Rose is not shy to shoot from the hip.
Here's the thing, I don't think he's that wrong. I think the way he expressed it was, human instinct would suggest that Kyrie Irving, who's the man, doesn't want his team to win without him.
I experienced a team winning the Stanley Cup, and I'll admit, I watched, and I'm thinking, please don't do this. Because I've been only gone 1 year, and you win it without me. But to actually be on the team and in the press box and say that, that's insane. That's an insane comment. I'm not buying that.
You think Kyrie Irving wants Boston to win?
Absolutely. To sit there and think an athlete would think, I don't want this team to win because I'm not a player in it?
I played with a goalie one time, my partner, where I knew he did not want me to play well.
I believe that. Now, that's individual competition between
competition,
the two of you.
But if I play well, the team does well,
right,
and vice versa. But I had a feeling like you get that like weird feeling like this guy's giving you the hex from the bench.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard stories of a certain goalie in the NHL that played in a tight defensive system, and he was injured, and the boys were winning 6-1, 6-2. He got on the bus one night and said, party's over, boys. 2-1 hockey coming up. I'm back in the pipes. I'm sure you can guess who that probably was.
Yeah, I think I know exactly who it was. Yeah. Is he in the rental car business? Steve Phillips in 2 minutes. Game 7 tonight down in Tampa. We'll tee it up with Ray just after 5. The NFL with a new anthem policy that is causing quite a stir online. We'll tell you about that. Jerry's percentages in about an hour. But Steve Phillips coming up here in just a second. And the Jays back in action tonight. They got a win over the Angels last night. Jose Bautista is now a member of the New York Mets. Like, I don't think this is a Brett Favre-type move, because Favre was still at the top of his game for the most part when he was doing the whole retirement thing.
And right.
You knew he was going to be sought after, and you expected big things when he returned and wherever he played.
I don't think this is going to last long. It's just some of those swings last night. This is, like, this is the 18th hole of this guy's career.
Yeah, it is.
And I don't think it can last longer than 10 days, because you kind of get what you see what you got, and it's like you can't continue with that.
His bat speed just isn't there anymore. I mean, he violently turned on balls for years. You know, you don't hit 54 home runs without that kind of speed.
No way.
But you watch, even last night, he got tested a couple times, and it's like, dude, take some weight off the bat or something.
Serrano, I've talked to hockey players, Brian, where it's like, we'll ask Steve, what happens in baseball? Is it like, do the hands go first? Do the legs fall off? Like, how does it come to an end?
Well, here's Steve Phillips, our baseball analyst. Take us through this thought process from the Mets in terms of Bautista and why anybody should believe he's going to stick with them long term.
Yeah, look, the reason they went and brought in Jose Bautista is that Todd Frazier, the third baseman, is hurt. Jonas Cespedes, the left fielder, is hurt. Their center fielder, Juan Lagares, is out likely for the year. And so they need some right-handed bats and potentially some right-handed power. So they figured, why not take a flyer? We'll see what he looks like. And right now, I think what it is, and surprisingly, Bautista's competing against Jose Reyes. Jose Reyes is their utility guy. And his numbers this year are awful. I mean, Reyes looks like he's done as well. And so they're going to try to catch lightning in a bottle, see if it works. And if not, you know, it's a minimum salary investment at this point on from their part. So, you know, they're going to take a shot at it. But I'm with you. I don't think he has a whole lot left. And what happens is players lose the elasticity in their body, that ability to that sort of quick twitch turning and rotation. And I saw it firsthand with Robbie Alomar. I got him from Cleveland. Alomar, and it was a great deal, right? He's coming off a season where he hit 330, hit 20 homers, stole 30 bases, drove in 100 runs, scored 100 runs. I'm thinking, man, I've got this guy. I know he's on the backside of his prime, but I'm thinking I'm getting this guy, this dynamic player. And when we got him, he lost that quick twitch. He lost that elasticity where you can kind of turn quickly, rotate, and catch that inside pitch. And so everything became one speed. It's a lot like Troy Tulowitzki right now. He's got one speed with which he can play, and it doesn't have any of that sort of acceleration with anything he does. And Batista's kind of in that same mold right now.
We were talking about Teoscar Hernandez, who's been a real bright spot for the Jays. I mean, he had a great spring, and they started him down in the minors, and eventually they called him up based on injuries, and he played so well, and he put up such big numbers. They're like, we got to keep him around. And for the most part, he's been hitting cleanup on this team. But he's been seeing a pretty steady dosage recently of breaking pitches, and Gibbons was quoted about 20 minutes ago saying basically the league's figuring him out, and they're starting to throw breaking pitches at him. This is basically protocol around major leagues, isn't it? I mean, the guy
What the hell's the adjustment? Because he knows he's never going to see another fastball.
Well, that's
again.
The question, right? Like, how this is a huge test for his whole career, isn't it, Steve? Because you can't just be waiting for fastballs all the time.
Well, here's the thing. It's a huge test for his career, but, you know, pitchers pitch you differently when you're batting cleanup than when you're batting six or seven. And I think that move by the team to put him into the number four spot was an acknowledgement that other teams took notice of. And they're like, okay, well, we figured out that you can hit that fastball down and away. We figured out that you can handle the fastball in. Now we're going to put a wrinkle in it. And you know, it's interesting because a lot of times for hitters, they don't have to figure out how to hit the curveball or the breaking ball. They have to figure out how to take it, right? Take it until you have to swing at it, or pick a count, figure out the sequencing of pitches, the way they're throwing to you, and guess on it. Sit on one and then drive it, and that's one of the quickest ways to chase teams off of the breaking ball. And so you don't have to hit six in a row, six breaking pitches in a row to get teams to say, well, maybe he's figured it out. You have to hit one. Hit one. One really good one. And all you're doing is you're looking for it, and you drive it, and then they go, okay, well, we better go back to that fastball away. So it's that game of adjustments that it doesn't have to be a major shift in his approach. He just needs to figure it out a little bit at a time.
With Steve Phillips, our baseball analyst, we had this conversation yesterday. Shohei Ohtani has taken the majors by storm, and it's his first time in Toronto, so understandably people are excited about it. But when I think of the Angels, regardless of how well Ohtani's playing, I still think of Mike Trout. I mean, I have too much respect for him, and I think...
Dude, Mike Trout was signing autographs yesterday, and he signed like two, and then he went back to the dugout.
Right, and I'm sure Ohtani came out, and he had to sign hundreds or dozens.
I couldn't believe it.
Right. I mean, I think this is a fundamental problem that baseball has, Steve. I mean, Trout is putting forth, statistically, the greatest season in Major League Baseball history. He's given us enough data over the past 6 or 7 years to suggest that by the end of his career, he could be in contention for the greatest player of all time. And he rolls into town in Toronto, and it's like, oh, that's cool, but who's this other guy?
Yeah.
Like, that's a problem, isn't it?
No doubt. Yeah, I mean, it is. Look, Trout never got the attention, even without Ohtani there. I think a lot of it because he's on the West Coast, and so, you know, by the time he's playing, people on the East Coast are going to bed. They're not watching him. He's not getting enough attention on the East Coast. He's also not a guy who seeks the spotlight. You know, he's not a great interviewer. He's a nice kid, and he'll give you a nice stock answer, but there's nothing compelling about him or controversial about him. And so, you know, he just plays, and he's kind of vanilla in a lot of ways other than, you're right, he's the greatest player, arguably, that may ever play the game. Ohtani's different, right? He's unique. I mean, there's a reason why people like Aaron Judge and they like Jose Altuve. They like the big guy and they like the little guy, the giant and the little guy. Because they're different. And so Ohtani, because he's a pitcher and a hitter, it's unique to the game. it's somewhat a pioneer in a trendsetter, and it changed. People are intrigued by it. So there's a little bit of a freak show sort of perspective to it, right? That they're like, who is this guy? We want to see what he's made of. And Trout just keeps going out there. Trout doesn't seem to mind at all. Trout seems to get along with Ohtani great. He loved when Pujols came out there. He just plays, and he lets his game speak for himself. But, yeah, I think there is some part of it that I wish Trout was, you know, people had a better perspective and understanding about what they're seeing and what we're actually watching in this guy. We'll know it 20 years from now, but I think people are going to look back and say, geez, I wish I had acknowledged it a little bit more when this guy was playing.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I want to ask you about some of these teams that have been tire fires for a number of years and basically were tanking and rebuilding through the draft and trying to pick up prospects through trades that are now having success that nobody really saw coming. And it's the NL East we're really talking about here, the Braves and the Phillies. The Braves in particular are a great, great story. And they're loaded with young talent, and they've been awful for a while. The Phillies, too. We saw Houston do that years ago, the Cubs to a bit of a lesser extent. And now, I mean, I think we have a full-blown conversation on our hands throughout Major League Baseball of tanking. There's a lot of teams that appear to be tanking. But when you see this kind of success from the Braves and the Phillies, is it starting to make sense? Can you understand why teams would tank in baseball?
Well, here's the thing. I think all you have to do is look at the last three World Series champions. You go from the Royals and the fact that they went through a rebuilding process. The Cubs, Theo Epstein, tore it all the way down to the ground and built it back up again. And then obviously the Astros. I mean, the last three World Series champions all went through that process. And what we see in Atlanta right now, I mean, these young kids are dynamic. And how about for the Phillies? So the Phillies win a game the other day. Nick Williams hit a home run. He's a player that came over in the Cole Hamels trade. Jorge Alfaro, their catcher, made three unbelievable defensive plays in the game. He came over in the Cole Hamels deal. And Nick Pivetta started and threw seven shutout innings. He came over the Jonathan Papelbon deal. And so when teams talk about rebuilding and going to the deadline and making trades to improve themselves and bring young kids in, look at the return that they got there. Starting catcher, starting right fielder, and a starting pitcher in two deals. And so other teams that are on that borderline start looking at what the Braves and Phillies have done, what the Cubs and Astros and Royals did, and think, yeah, we want some of that. We'll buy into that. And so, you know, I think I think fans are more accepting. Now, the only problem is I think fans are accepting that may be the way to go. They just don't want to watch it until you're good again. And that's where the attendance numbers fell off a little bit for some of these rebuilding teams. And that's not exactly what baseball wants either.
Great stuff as always, Steve. We'll do it again soon. Thanks, man.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
Here's Steve Phillips, our baseball analyst. I mean, that's obviously the give and take.
Right.
That, sure, there's going to be a payoff or potentially a payoff. It's not guaranteed in 3 or 4 years, but the 3 or 4 years leading up to it is going to be like watching paint dry. It's horrible.
Yeah, it's. But, I mean, that's what you're hoping for is the payoff, the turnaround.
And if you're a middle ground team anyway, who cares? Like, what did you miss out on? You know, that's what I've always argued. Like, okay, you can win 80 games and not be a playoff team. Or win 60 and get high picks and
right.
Give your kids a chance to play. You know, why win 80 and not be in contention? You might as well get something out of every season.
Try and win 90-plus once they
exactly
get to
3-4 years down the road.
Level. Yeah.
Kind of feels like the Jays are in that position now where they got to figure out who they are and what they are and how they want to approach it. Rays coming up in about 20 minutes. Game 7 down in Tampa. Jerry's percentage is at 530. All right, Rays coming up just after 5. We'll start teeing up Game 7 tonight, Tampa, Washington, and get back into the news from earlier today. Brandon Pridham has been promoted to assistant GM of the Maple Leafs. So it's Shanahan, Dubas, Pridham, and then, of course, Babcock and all the players, which
correct.
Ultimately is what really matters. I mean, everyone factors in, but you do on the ice is what really matters in the end. So we'll get into that with Ray, and the NFL has a new anthem policy that the players are not happy about, and Jerry's percentages at 5:30.
You've been listening to Overdrive, delivered by Skip the Dishes. Skip the Dishes delivers the food you want from the restaurants you love. Place your order using the Skip the Dishes app or online at skipthedishes.com.